Johnny McKinnon developed a fierce headache just before dawn. He'd slept poorly, spells of fitful dreaming and heart-skittering wakefulness. Now he lay still and chilled, watching through half-opened eyes as gray October light pushed into the bedroom. In his head, jackhammers. Pile drivers. My God. He looked to his right and found the bed empty. Pauline had already risen. He closed his eyes and listened. She was moving around the kitchen downstairs. There was the soft thunk of the refrigerator door and Pauline's voice, indistinct but lilting, speaking to the dog. There was the music of spoons and ceramic mugs on tile. There was the faint rushing of a compressor. The air conditioning temperature was set too low. Johnny found it all immeasurably irksome. He was hurting, and he was cold. The only way out of it is through it. He'd read that somewhere. He willed himself out of bed and made for the bathroom, where he swallowed 3 ibuprofen tablets with handfuls of water from the tap and took a shower while waiting impatiently for relief. It arrived, tentatively. The pounding in his head resolved slowly to a dull echo. He dressed and descended the stairs. Then, standing at the kitchen sink with a cup of coffee, he immediately found himself caught in a nettlesome conversation with Pauline, who thought they ought to give Johnny's son, Corin, a call today. It was Corin's 30th birthday, she reminded him. But Johnny wasn't keen. I have a headache, he said, and I need to get to the factory.
Well, maybe later then. Did you take something? Ibuprofen? Maybe you need to eat.
Pauline was standing next to the kitchen table, rigging an iPod to the waistband of her shorts in preparation for a run.
Eat and feel better, and then we could call him.
Or you could call him on the drive-in. I took something. I'm not hungry.
Just to say happy birthday, try to get past this thing.
Johnny regarded his reflection in the kitchen window and didn't answer immediately. The air conditioner finally sighed to rest, and in the sudden silence, he could hear the indistinct bickering of fractious gulls, the faint thumping of waves on sand. 2 blocks away, the Atlantic Ocean advanced, retreated, advanced.
I don't think so, Pauline.
But there's the baby now, Pauline said. You're a grandfather. Don't you want to mend the fence?
There's no fence to mend, Johnny said. Corin's seen to that.
An exaggeration, perhaps, but metaphorically sound.
He's clean now. It's what we wanted. You could just swallow your pride and give him a call,
Pauline said. He needs to apologize to us. He could give me a call. Pauline always said stubbornness was the same as stupidity.
One day you'll be sorry, she told Johnny. Your only child. One day you'll regret this.
One day he'll regret it, Johnny said.
Pauline threw up her hands.
He's your son. And if I can forgive him, you ought to be able to.
Pauline, Johnny said.
I can't. Tough love.
You wouldn't understand. That stopped her. She hated that. To be reminded that she wasn't Corin's real mother. That she wasn't anybody's real mother, and therefore couldn't possibly understand how any parent could turn his back on his own child. Johnny didn't mean to hurt her, but he couldn't discuss it anymore.
Lord have mercy, she said,
her injury quickly turning to annoyance. She moved to the center of the kitchen and started to do toe raises.
I swear to heaven, Johnny, you could piss off the Pope.
Sometimes, like when Pauline was irritated with him, for example, the North Florida argot he always found so arousing became even more pronounced. When he'd first arrived in Jacksonville from Scotland at 27, he'd been astounded at the local dialect. It was real. And to meet someone of Pauline's beauty and grace and hear the tangy drawl of her voice had been almost too much.